KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
On To the Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
You have this kind of asymmetrical warfare coming from a guy who's great at a soundbite, lousy at an answer.
So are you looking for your own billionaire?
Nope. No, I don't want my own billionaire. I'm going to raise the vast majority of the money.
Brace yourself, America, for what?
King Trump.
I'm Warren Olney. To the Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To the Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
I was just intensely curious to test the system, to test what happens if you make a show and don't ask anybody to come see it. You just tell them it's there and don't even tell everybody.
When comedian Louis C.K. made his series, Horace and Pete, he kept it entirely secret. No leaks, no advertising. Once he was ready to launch the drama about a family that runs a Brooklyn bar, he just emailed fans. C.K. tells us why he made Horace and Pete entirely off the network grid and distributed it online, even though he's trying to stay off the internet himself. But first on the news banter, Disney disappoints, the Redstone saga takes still more twists, and an update from Cannes. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter all the way from Cannes, from the Cannes Film Festival. Hello, Matt. Bonjour, Matt.
Bonjour. That's the extent of my French, so please don't ask anything else.
I will ask for you to bring me a croissant from the Croisette. So let's start with, even though you're in France, let's start with something in the United States, Walt Disney. Walt Disney took a shot this week. Its revenue and earnings did not meet second quarter expectations. The analysts were disappointed in its cable TV and consumer products businesses. And that is kind of astonishing because, you know, from we maybe have some tunnel vision here. We are watching a movie studio with hits like Star Wars, Zootopia, Jungle Book, which are just, you know, a ridiculous, impossible string of hits and success. And yet, Disney got kind of clobbered.
Right. It's all about ESPN. I mean, for so many years, Disney was propped up by the media networks, which includes the biggest channel on cable, ESPN. But now there's signs of weakness there. There's cord cutting. There's ad rates are softening. And what Wall Street is seeing is the future. And the future is ESPN doesn't really have a strategy, at least not yet, to maintain that growth that sustained Disney for so many years. So it's just getting pummeled.
Yeah, Bob Iger, the CEO and chairman, said, I'm surprised we didn't get one question about our studio, but the analysts just were not looking at that. They know it's successful and they're looking elsewhere. You know, it also, there is this issue that we've talked about before with Bob Iger, there's no successor. And, you know, that's another thing that came up in a call with these Wall Street analysts and investors is like, what are you going to do? And I don't think, you know, he said, I have 2 years to find somebody. But in these situations, it could be a very difficult process for Disney to come up with someone after Tom Staggs, who had been given the, you know, crowned the successor, was suddenly ejected from the company.
Yeah, it's really a difficult situation. And Iger was very coy on the call this week. He said, basically, that I have no current plans to extend my contract. Didn't say I would never, ever in a million years do it. Seems like he's trying to find someone, but knows that if it doesn't happen, he may want to stay on and just kind of, he doesn't want to leave the company in chaos. And I think that not being able to find a proper successor would do exactly that.
Yeah, I think everybody more or less assumes that he actually does want to stay. And in that situation, there are people who probably would take the job, but are they the people they want? And this succession issue, we've seen more drama. We're just going to try and wrap up the latest insane goings on in the Sumner Redstone situation. You know, several days ago, the judge threw out the case brought by his former companion, Manuela Hertzer. She was seeking reinstatement as his healthcare proxy. So that's gone. And then she promptly sued his daughter, Shari, accusing her and others, accusing them of a conspiracy against her to deprive her of this money that Sumner Redstone was going to leave her. And meanwhile, Shari Redstone, is in the, maybe Sumner Redstone, one or the other, is going to sue, supposedly, her, trying to get back some of the money he had previously given her. So this fight continues. And the question is, you know, it is shining this light on, apparently the judge felt he was that Redstone was competent enough to say he didn't want Manuela Hertzer as his healthcare rep. But the question of is he competent to be involved with major corporations, Viacom and CBS, that is a separate level of competency and a much higher bar.
Absolutely. We know from your reporting over the past few months that you can be found competent to make your decisions on your own and then still not competent enough to be the CEO or the executive chairman or the controlling shareholder of a public company. So there's a different standard there. And I think what we're going to see over the next couple months is increased drama, not less drama at Viacom. Now that the ex-companions case has been thrown out, it's going to move to the boardroom.
Yeah, and the board members are supposedly the board members of Viacom coming to look at Sumner Redstone themselves to see how he seems. And I'm going to guess he doesn't seem too good. And this will then turn into ultimately a battle for control. And whether this trust will take over that is supposed to step in if Redstone is not competent. And you're right. I think completely the drama is not going to die down. Let's turn to the drama at Cannes. We at The Hollywood Reporter, we ran a cover on Woody Allen, which prompted his son, Ronan Farrow, to tweet that we had not pressed him hard enough on the allegations of child abuse that his sister had raised and his mother, Mia Farrow. We, at that point, there was a lot of conversation, and we invited Ronan Farrow to write an essay, which he did for The Hollywood Reporter, and boy, it went from there.
Yeah, the talk of Cannes, at least for the first few days, has been not about the Woody Allen movie, but about the controversies surrounding Woody Allen himself. The fact that Ronan Farrow's op-ed challenging the media to go after these allegations of sexual abuse appeared on the day of the premiere of the film Cafe Society, really kicked things into overdrive, and it's all anyone can talk about here at the festival right now.
Yeah, there's been a lot of drama. We at The Hollywood Reporter were banned from a luncheon with Woody Allen for publishing that essay, and it has been, as you say, it has eclipsed the Cafe Society, which was meant to be a very splashy event. Merci beaucoup, Matt.
Merci beaucoup to you as well.
That's Matt Bellany, executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Louis C.K. has won Emmys for his FX show, Louis, as well as a stand-up special. He's also been a pioneer online. He's sold tickets to his live shows directly to fans, and he released a 2011 stand-up special on his website for $5 a download, prompting other comedians to do the same. Now he's taken that approach to the next level with Horace and Pete. C.K. wrote, produced, directed, and acted in the web series about a troubled family that runs a struggling Brooklyn bar. Horace and Pete are played by C.K. and Steve Buscemi. They run the 100-year-old bar with an older relative, also named Pete. In the first episode, the elder Pete, played by Alan Alda, explains to a stranger why he'll never sell the place.
Horace had a son named Horace, and Pete had a son named Pete. And when they died, those Horace and Pete inherited the place, and they ran it as the new Horace and Pete. And it's been like that, passing down from generation to generation ever since then. Always in the family. Always owned by a Horace and operated in partnership with a Pete.
Horace and Pete also stars Edie Falco and features a supporting cast that includes Jessica Lange, Stephen Wright, and SNL's Aidy Bryant, among others. All 10 episodes were funded entirely by CK, and Horace and Pete is available only on his website for now. Even though his new show lives online, the internet is a place CK is trying to avoid.
If you're good at managing your life, then it's the internet slides in and out of your life as you please. But I'm not. Nobody is. I don't think anybody is. So it got really bad, and I decided you don't have to do anything forever, but I'm going to stop using the internet for now and leaving the house without a phone that can email or text. I leave the house with a flip phone, and then very few people have the number and they can call me. And then when I get home, I have to go to my desk to sit, and the only thing that gets me on email is my computer, and I don't look at the internet. My mom, I talk to my mom every other day now, which is far more than I used to. And she gives me an update on like things people are saying about me on the internet or on Twitter. She checks my Twitter feed.
Oh, and, thank you, Mom.
Yeah. And then she gives me news. She tells me the news.
Is she positive or is she just mom-like?
She'll tell me there's something that this thing has sounded, this was a drag, but you know, I'd rather hear from my mom then look right at a, you know, something somebody wrote, positive or negative, because it all takes you for a ride emotionally. There's that side of it, the thing about people writing about me, but then there's also just trying to keep up with what's going on in the world in a way that I don't think is, I think it's very toxic. I don't think the surface internet, what Google takes you to.
Yes.
I think it's not a good thing. What we've all agreed on Google as our way of communicating, and Twitter, where everything, you just get what rises to the top. All these things make me very uneasy. So, yeah.
I read that as a result of quitting the internet. I want to know if this is literally true. You read Jane Austen.
Yes, Pride and Prejudice. I read the whole damn thing. And I have not read any book for at least 10 years.
Okay.
And Pride and Prejudice is dense. That's, and you got to really stick with it because it's, they string you along. I mean, awesome. When is Mr. Darcy going to propose? Why doesn't she just tell him she likes him? Why did she have to just, you know, sit
you
in the drawing room?
It was the late 18th, early
19th
century.
I know, but it's
century.
Heartbreaking. Just say, I like you too. Don't wait 6 months.
I just wanted to know that.
Yeah, beautifully written book. And that's what I'm doing. I'm reading. I'm trying to read and then just sit and be quiet. And if I want to know something, instead of Googling it, I ask somebody if they know or, you know, research it.
I want to ask a little bit about your general career stuff.
Okay.
Before we get to Horace and Pete. So you show up in acting gigs like the Woody Allen Blue Jasmine.
Blue Jasmine.
How do you pick?
Acting parts. Well, I'm not a career actor, so I don't have to pick parts that I think will advance my career, or I don't have to pick parts that are going to pay me money because I make a living doing just anything else but that. I pick parts based on this, what I like the material. And then also, what's the schedule? Because I have custody of my kids, shared custody with their mom. And it's very important to me that I be there for all the times they're expecting to see me. So when I usually will be in a movie that shoots in the summer, because I get, we take the kids in chunks over the vacation. And it has to be somewhere that I'm not horrified to be in, you know, like Trumbo shot in New Orleans. And to me, I was like, yeah, I'll go to New Orleans for 2 weeks in the summer. And I was able to do some stand-up in town and enjoy the city. So that, and then whoever else is in the movie and if it's somebody I'm excited to
I was curious,
with.
And maybe it's a foolish question, why you still do stand-up? Does it feed you? Do you need to? Do you want to?
Well, it's what I do. I mean, it's the biggest thing that I do. It's the thing I most identify with that I do. Stand-up was never a means to an end to me. It's always been something worth being as good at it as possible. So I'll never quit it, I don't think.
So Horace and Pete.
Yeah.
The idea came to you to do this, and you didn't want to advertise it. You wanted the surface of the lake to be undisturbed by any noise about Horace and Pete.
That's
any little
right,
pebble
exactly.
about Horace and
exactly
Pete.
Exactly right.
Okay. Now, having done Horace and Pete, would you do it that way again?
100%. And I wish I could do it again, but I can never do that again. I knew that I had one shot ever to do that. And this time it wouldn't be the same. You know what I mean? Because I did it.
Well, why not? You managed to keep this secret, and I don't know how.
Yeah, and nobody had ever done that before. Nobody. Not like this. That's why I did it, because I wanted to see what would happen. I was just intensely curious to test the system, to test what happens if you make a show and don't ask anybody to come see it. You just tell them it's there. And don't even tell everybody. Just tell a very small group of people, the people that have, I have their email address because they've bought a special on my website or they've bought tickets to one of my live shows. And I wrote them an email just saying, Horace and Pete is available for download. We hope you like it. That's
right.
It. And I left the rest up to them. Well, there's one thing to be, when people make a TV show and they want people to watch it, they do this, you know, canvassing, this sort of carpet bombing of the entire population. Get everybody in the world to know what this is. Tell them as much as possible
right. Sometimes
about
you
it.
See the trailer and you feel like, thank you, I saw
your
whole
movie
for free. Yeah.
Because they want to give as many signals as they can, like all the things we have that we think are appealing, we got to get them out there. So that people can understand what it is that they're going to see. And then there's a whole bunch of people that are going to be aware of it that are, some people you're even trying to fool them a little bit, like this is this when it's not really this. So you get a ton of people to sample it. And then maybe 20% of them go, I like this. And the other 80% go, this stunk, I hate it.
Right.
So you start everything with first a kind of an imposing, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a front. That's what promotion is.
Right, a facade of
you're
something.
Forced to look at promotion. It's put in your eye line as you're driving down the street. Right. Yeah, you can't get away from it, and that's intentional. You're on a website looking at something you want to look at, and an advertisement slides up, like literally telling you, you must look at this. You don't want to see this, but you have to look at it. And that's the first stage. Then the second one is I'm going to try this thing because I was told it was funny, because I was told that it has music that I like and people that I like. And then you watch, you go, I didn't like it. So with the 20% of the people, the little group that ends up liking it and sticking with it, what's sticking onto that is this big bunch of people who hate it now and who also resent that they had to be aware of it on the sides of buses and everywhere they go, on the magazine they're trying to read and whatever. And so I thought, I'm okay right now. I get opportunities. There's nothing that's going to sink me. You know what I mean? Like, in other words, if Horace and Pete works or doesn't work, it's going to be okay. It's worth doing. So I want to really take it to a really obscure level of, like, I want to try this thing of, like, if you make something. And I also had a sense that this was going to be a very good show. The cast is excellent. And that it was going to be different from anything. And so I thought, if you make that, you can put it on the big network and you can shout to everybody, here it is, or you can bury it under a mountain and see who finds it.
Something in the middle, because when you associate yourself, there's no mountain.
That's right. So, but or if you just whisper, this is here, and
you
then
you
just
don't
see.
Have a whisper anymore. I'm sorry, but your whisper
you're right,
is
I
gone.
Don't. That's one thing that I learned is that no matter what I do, it's going to get a lot of coverage. But so I also made a conscious decision to launch it on Saturday morning, because that's the dark side of the moon for the internet. That is the worst time to launch anything because everybody's asleep, even BuzzFeed and whoever is asleep, although they're still there, but it's not the same because I didn't – the virus that's buzzing hardest on the internet, those publications that pick every story up and repeat it – they don't contribute much. And what they do is they take a story and they take the worst version of it because it's more interesting because it's clickbait. And they just sort of run up the basic version of it. And then it spreads everywhere and everybody sees it in 10 minutes and then it's gone. They forget it. And I don't think it's actually nutrition for a TV show. It's certainly not something that's meant to be thoughtful or interesting, you know what I mean? So I wanted to avoid that. I wanted to see what would happen if people just told each other about it.
You know what? It's sort of maybe a weird question too, but to me the name Horace and Pete sounds whimsical.
Yeah, a little bit, right?
And then you watch it, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, no, it's really intense.
Did you know that going in?
I thought it sounded cute, and it wasn't. Yes. And I was just so damn curious what it would be like to put something out there that no one knows if there's going to be more. No one knows moment to moment what to expect from the show. And I think that is so exciting for a storyteller to have people at that kind of an edge. Like, I don't even know what this is. And I knew some people would just reject it. They'd go, well, you didn't tell me anything, so I'm not going to look. That's okay. And also, by the way, with the way things are now, television isn't a broadcast anymore. And certainly not on a website. It's not an event that you need to see or not. And I knew we'll have a few different waves for this show. We'll have the putting it on the air every time I was making it and putting it on the air at the end of each week. And the people who were there for the launch and for the unfolding, that would be one thing. And I knew that would be an intimate experience. And that would also set the tone for what people were going to say about it. I thought, this has the best chance of getting a good reaction, good reviews, and general goodwill if I don't ask everybody in the world to watch it, especially because I just came off of, 5 years in a row of being at the Emmys with my other show and being extremely visible. I thought anything I make at that level, on that frequency, can only go one way, which is down. But if I just scramble the picture and just go, just make this quiet little thing, then everyone's feeling about it was, yeah, this is awfully weird, but I'll keep watching it.
Coming up after a short break, Louis C.K. explains how hosting SNL helped prepare him for making Horace and Pete, and why he felt okay taking out a line of credit to pay for it. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Subscribe to KCRW's Today's Top Tune download podcast to receive a free song of the day and find Today's Top Tune on KCRW's iTunes page.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to comedian, actor, and producer Louis C.K. about his new series, Horace and Pete, which is available on his website. Horace and Pete takes place mostly inside a dingy Brooklyn bar. C.K. plays Horace, and Alan Alda plays his Uncle Pete, who refuses to adapt to the desires of a younger clientele, even if it would help his business.
Hi, can we get two Coronas?
All right, all you people, out, now.
Wait, what are you
There's
doing?
There's too many people in here. There hasn't been this many people since the bar opened 100 years ago.
Yeah,
come on,
okay.
Bar's closing,
no,
let's go.
You can't throw out our customers.
Hey, these aren't our customers. These people want martinis and Coronas.
God damn it, Pete, what the f*** is wrong with you?
What
From the beginning, C.K. wanted to make and fund Horace and Pete entirely on his own, even though he easily could have gotten someone else to pay for it.
Yeah, sure. I'm definitely in that place where I could do that. But I feel like that's a chip that I have that I can grab off the table. But it's still there because I didn't just use it. In other words, I didn't have to. I knew that I figured we can make the money back. And also, there's a speed with money. How fast do you make it back? Do you know what I mean? I don't care if it takes me a year to get the money back.
Well, you're leading me to a quote that I read that you said.
Okay.
I think you said it on your blog.
Yeah.
Every second the cameras are rolling, money is shooting out of my ass like your mother's worst diarrhea.
Yes. Yes.
Was that a surprise or you knew?
No, I knew it was. I didn't know how it would feel. I didn't know how it would feel to be spending money that fast. And it was intense. It was intense to feel that. But I also loved that experience of making a show and knowing I'm paying for every single person who's standing around here and every piece of equipment.
This is where I got confused.
Okay.
So you were made for,
yeah.
And then you said, hey, everybody, we're out of money.
No, I mean, that was a little, it's funny, when you're on Howard Stern, you wanted the story to sound better than it does, because Howard is a great listener and he's a very funny guy.
Right.
So the narrative of his show was that I'm stupid, I don't know how to make money, like I don't do anything, I don't go the traditional routes in terms of a career.
Okay. There was a conceit.
Yeah, right. After four episodes, which is what I was prepared to pay for, we weren't making any money because obviously I didn't advertise the show. My advertising budget so far has been zero. And I realized this is going to come slow. I could see that sales rate, I was like, we'll get there. The show will pay for itself, but not before I'm done making it. That's the thing I wasn't sure of. You know, I own a piece of my show at FX, so they send me a statement that tells me how the show's doing financially. And I went back and looked at those because I had seen that, well, the show's in deficit for a while before it makes its money back. And I wanted to know, how long do they draw that deficit for? And the advertising dollars that they make, like on a first run of any show, that doesn't pay the bills. And so I realized, well, it's acceptable to be in debt.
This is fine.
Yeah, if I'm trying to do what networks do, and I am, take debt and keep moving. And I will make the money back later. I knew that within the year I would make it back at that point. But I thought also, which was always the plan, when I'm done making this show in this Dark Side of the Moon period, I will go out and promote it. And when I do that, I know how fast things on my website sell when they're promoted. So I went and got a line of credit and started paying for the show that way. To me, that's worth it. That's okay to do that.
I mean, I don't know anything about your personal finances, but is it something that makes you anxious, or you're just
of course
like,
it does. I mean, any debt makes me anxious. I don't like it, you know. but it was okay. It was worth doing. And also I'm making enough, I have enough revenue streams. I can go out and do stand-up. I'm doing a tour now that will eclipse all of this, that will be lucrative enough to make all this irrelevant. It just makes it irrelevant in terms of my personal finances.
Right.
That's the way that is. Now, it could be that aliens invade and I can't tour and then I'm in some trouble. Then I got to go get an axe and learn how to do work that you can do with an axe. but I have a feeling if aliens invade, no one's going to come after me for the
Probably the debt collectors will be confused by
the whole thing. But anyway, so I started to, I took on the debt and I kept making the show and I decided this is okay. And once I decided that, we were all fine. And then the show started selling faster. And then when the show ended, a lot of people wrote big pieces about the ending of the show. And then it started to double in sales. And then I finally put out the Buy All 10 at Once.
Right.
And I learned something there because the rate of sales has kind of a pulse. And when the 10 episodes at once came up, the pulse stayed the same, but at the 10 episodes level. So it 10 times, you know what I mean?
They it kept buying like accelerated very quickly.
Right away, multiplied by 10.
Right.
Because it's the same. People didn't care if they were spending $5 or $31. They just went, boom, I'll go to that one. It's right. Easier. And then since I've been promoting it, the show's been making triple the money on a daily basis that it was making when I was making it.
So you're good.
Projecting the way it's going, sometime in June or July, the show will be paid for. I mean, I will have paid for the entire show with the sales online, which I never thought would happen that quickly.
That's pretty quick.
It's very good. So I'll own a show that is in total black tape.
You've talked a bit about the amazing cast. You'd mentioned that you, in another interview, you were interested in Jack Nicholson and...
Yeah. Chris Walken. Joe Pesci. Yeah.
Did anybody look at it and read the script and say, are you nuts? This is so dark. I don't want to be in this.
No, everybody liked the material. I mean, Jack Nicholson called me just to say that he really enjoyed the script, but he wasn't interested in it. He didn't want to be on new media.
He said that?
Yeah, and I said, well, could I make a case for it? And he said, I'm doing okay with movies. And he's got a good point. I don't think Jack Nicholson needs to do anything different than what he's been doing. And I don't think he's like, how do I do this thing? He doesn't care. But it was very nice. He called me just to say he liked it. Everybody who read it had a very positive reaction to the material. So, and that's how the cast...
I mean, it was very off-brand, obviously, for Alan Alda, but he probably loved that.
Yeah, he was really, really excited to do it. But yeah, and I was very inclusive with them. Every time I wrote a new episode, I'd send it to the whole cast and hear how they felt about it. And we shared everything.
I pre-wrote the whole season,
except for the 9th and 10th episode I had outlined, but I didn't write them until we were in production because I wanted to get a little more sense of how the show felt. And I also didn't want the ending that I had written. I didn't want it to end the way it did, so I wanted to see if maybe I'll find something else. But after a few weeks of shooting, I was like, no, there's no other way for this to end.
This is the way it has to be.
Yeah.
So you shoot it, you scramble to edit, you throw it up online. That's mm-hmm. how it was at first?
Well, Steve Buscemi was the first person I sort of became partners with on this thing. Like, I contacted him about it, and he was interested. And we both have hosted Saturday Night Live, Steve and I. And we both thought it would be fun to sort of have this experience that Monday we're not sure exactly how the show's going to go, and then we just do it in a week and have it done. And part of the advantage I saw in having a multi-camera thing is that we could try to do a live line cut that would be close to what the viewer would see. We did the show as like kind of like a live event, but with no audience. So tape day had this feeling of like it's game day. We would shoot it on Wednesday and Thursday. We shoot it over 2 days. And then Friday, I'd work with the editor, and she would, like, we didn't cut the timing. We would just sort of slide the cameras around. But we wanted it to feel live, so we left it intact the way it was performed.
And you would do it again, the whole concept.
Absolutely. It's my favorite thing I've ever done. It was my favorite.
It's your favorite thing you've ever done.
Yeah, I mean,
wow.
Louis was my favorite. That's been the best to me, and I love that show. The only reason this is my favorite is because I just did it.
Okay.
Because it's just brand new. But I would certainly, I intend to do it again. I'll definitely use this model again. It worked. It was a success. I mean, we were going to make the money back. The show was what we wanted it to be. Then after that, it's an asset. It's a series that anybody who wants it, if Netflix or Hulu or whoever decides that they want to run it, that'll all be profit. All the money that they pay
for.
Oh,
yeah. You're going to try and...
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like any other... But we're at the head of the stream. So as far as the stream of where you can sell television...
Right. But then Netflix would still, for a price, I guess, determined by Netflix.
Sure. Netflix or Hulu or Vimeo. There's a whole bunch of places now.
You haven't had that conversation?
Not yet, because I don't want to yet. I want to wait and see what happens to it, see what we how we do with the Emmys. I want to get all the way to the
this
end
is
of
an
this
experiment,
thing.
And it's not over.
It's so not over. It just started. For most of the people in the country, it's just it doesn't even exist yet. It's like we just finished making a movie and we just released it.
Louis C.K. is the creator of Horace and Pete. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.